Hey, all y'all Code Pen Radio listeners. This is Chris Coyer coming at ya. I'm with Marie. Hi, Marie.
Hey, everybody.
At episode 413 of this. 100 for all 13 years of our startup. No, that doesn't, the math doesn't check out
no,
there. Anyway,
that's okay.
We're 13 years old now.
We're showing our age.
We are. And I like that. I like the title of this that you came up with, Still Indie After All These Years. And I guess we are. I like the title, but I wonder if we do you get indie, even though the one like threat to our indie status is that we launched in 2012 and in 2015, we took a friends and family funding round, but that makes us, we're still a startup when you take a funding round, but do you lose your indie status when you do it or no?
What the heck?
No. Well, how much funding do you have to take to not be indie? A lot more.
Yes. Yeah. No, we are absolutely indie. We are touring in a panel van type of indie here.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. So yeah, 2012 is when we launched. So I definitely still think of us as a startup. I don't know when you lose that, but that's when we're, I don't know, you lose the drive or something, or I don't know, you hire your first CEO that isn't a founder or something.
Yeah, it's a little funny to think about what the definition of that is, because we are still a very small company and we're still doing something that is relatively new in a lot of ways. But I don't know that it's fair to call us a startup, because I think
no, we have lost that one. Oh man.
I think so. Okay. I think we are an established
small business.
Yeah, exactly. A long established at this point, small business, which no shame in it. Doesn't sound as cool, but that's it.
It kind of does. I don't mind it. Small business. Sometimes you say that in the right crowd and it's, you know, it's like a little badge of pride or something, you know. I think politicians like it at least.
Well, sure. Yeah, it's shorthand for a certain type of voter, but you know, it is something to be proud of. If you can keep a business going as long as we have, and keep the character of the business like we've kept it, which is that, you know, we're just still doing CodePen and have always meant to do CodePen. I think that's something to be proud of. You stuck to your vision.
Oh, yeah, we totally did. It's a lot of work, it turns out. And we apparently hit a way of making money that is sustainable.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's cool, right? It was tricky, though. And, you know, it wasn't just like we did that on day one and it's been fine ever since. We've had to wiggle and waggle our way to stay there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And it's, you know, no surprise it comes from mostly pro subscriptions from y'all. I bet there's like, you know, just because I know if you're listening to this show, I bet there's a pretty decent chance you're pro just because I don't know. I just bet that you are, or at least the percentage is higher than your average random group of people that know about CodePen. So thank you is the point of that. For your pro subscriptions, that mostly sustains us as a company. And then we get so much traffic that it would be kind of, and we have so many free users, like way, way, way mostly free users, that it seems stupid not to monetize that chunk too. So even though it's a smaller chunk, it's still worth doing for now, for us. And that's pretty much the only two ways we make money. Was there ever anything else? I don't know. Maybe we sold a t-shirt once or twice. So we had a job board.
We weren't
for a
making
minute.
Money.
Yeah.
We weren't making money from selling t-shirts. That was that was more, we had to think of it more of like marketing, which, you know, is perfectly fine. Merchandise is marketing. When people, it was exciting that people were willing to wear hats and t-shirts that had our logo on it. That was cool. It meant that they liked CodePen enough to
still
put
do
it
to
on
some
themselves.
Degree. Some people will write in and be like, my hat done worn out. Send me another one.
And that's, I mean, that's pretty cool. People are wearing those hats long enough to need another one.
Yeah. Yeah. We replace them generally. We're like the Patagonia of startup hats.
If you had a hat, you can always have a hat.
And so we've seen some things, as you could say. I think that's what you wanted to talk about a little bit, is some trends kind of gone by or come circle. Remote work being one of them. We always were, I guess.
Yeah. No, we have always been remote. Unless you three founders had an office together that I didn't know about in the early
office,
days.
But we did live in the same city at first, but that really didn't last very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't living in the same house. I mean, there wasn't like a formal location. Yeah.
Our office was a bar. We had like a standing meeting on Mondays or something, and we'd eat chicken wings and talk about what CodePen could do. Not an office. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't come on the scene for 2 years, so I was not part of the early days there. But I've been here a while at this point, 10 years now.
Yeah, nobody was. You're the first one, right? I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. You're a first hire. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I am. Still it's here. A technicality. I always have to qualify it with that. It's a technicality. Rach joined us around the same time, but it was a different set of paperwork. So.
Fair enough. Wow. And both still here. How cool.
Yeah.
So remote work was a thing. But I don't think we thought of it as particularly innovative or interesting or anything at first. It was like, we work from home because there's computers at our house.
Yeah. So actually, I wanted to ask you to tell the story about that because I kind of feel like I remember you've been like a remote worker for like forever. Didn't you cut a deal with like an early employer of yours that you're like, I'm just going to work from home?
It did, because I was like living in Wisconsin. That's where I'm born and raised, you know? And I had a friend in Portland, Oregon be like, you should come out here. We got an extra room at our house. And I was scared, you know, like I hadn't even gone on very many vacations in my life. I just was a Wisconsin kid. So are my parents. That's how my family rolls. Like we just didn't, it just doesn't come up this idea of like, maybe I'll leave Wisconsin, you know, right. That's just not how my people thought, you know? And I was a little scared of that because I was like, I don't know. I think I want a little bit more out of my life, maybe, or I'm young enough to like take some chances. I don't know what was going through my mind exactly. But when he said, come on out to Portland, I was like, I think I'm going to do it, you know? And I had my first job in quote unquote tech. It was a long time ago. You know, I don't remember the exact year. You go to chriscoyer.com, .net/something. I have like a timeline. So when people ask me these questions, I can go to the URL and be like, oh, it was this year. But I just nice. I usually don't care. You know, it's like, I don't know. It was a long time ago. And it was living through this time when design agencies like needed to start doing more digital design. Because a lot of times they were just like doing magazines and print ads and whatever else, brochures. They're like, and the same companies that needed a brochure would be like, can you do the website too? You know? And this agency was going through that change. And I was like, I'll make websites, you know, and did. But then, you know, even in the office, we used AIM, you know, instant messenger to talk with each other about what's going on. Like even when we were in the office, and then once in a while I'd work from home and I was like, dude, this is exactly the same. So not really worried about it. You know, I'd start working at home more and more. And then when it was come time to leave, I was like, dude, I don't want to leave this job. And I don't think I need to leave this job just because I'm moving away. And he really didn't like it, but it was like, I don't want to be screwed again. I have all these, you know, clients that you work with directly. And, you know, so anyway, he was willing to give it a shot. And it was fine. Just like I thought it would be, it was fine. Nobody cared. We got a lot of work done. And I did that for years after it. So yeah, I was like a remote employee. It didn't feel like totally the first remote employee ever, you know. I was like, whatever. Well, no. It's like people do that.
I'm sure you were not. Yeah.
Oh no, I just mean like, I don't know, it didn't even feel that weird. Yeah, it was that. And then when I got invited to work at Wufoo, which is like part of the CodePen story, because Alex and Tim were already there at Wufoo, and Wufoo was remote too. It just was weird. It was like the weirdest remote company ever. It was like, you're remote, but you have to live in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, yeah. It was probably just because it was some kind of regulations or whatever, or something to do with payment.
They just liked it too, because we'd all hang out, and because everybody's young. Nice. It was one of these young people startups that, you know, we'd go to movies and dinner and stuff. And then,
How nice.
Yeah. You want to go to a movie? You can use the CodePen credit card. It's called.
Oh, I'm always going to movies. Don't worry.
Cool. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it was fun. But then we get together on Friday and we did all these like sort of famously, because it's been in a couple books, we'd like write thank you letters to our pro members and stuff. And then people would like that and it would become like viral marketing or something. Really wasn't scalable, but it was nice. It was a way of like, because we're all young. We were like, you're going to be grateful, child. going to be grateful to these people that sign up for your app and pay for it. Anyway, yeah. So that was quote unquote remote. And then when mm-hmm. we got bought by SurveyMonkey and went there, we couldn't. There was no remote. I think there's like work from home, like one day a week, maybe if you get approved. Mm-hmm. But I didn't even know this about myself at the time. I was like, I don't know if I even care that much. I'll go to the office, whatever, you know, at least there's people there and I don't, you know, I'm alone and single. I might as well be at the office.
Right.
And then I hated it. I didn't like it at all. So that didn't work out. Know,
it seems like remote has worked out really well for you over the time.
Yeah, I like it.
Over your career.
I like it.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us here at Copen now hate it. Do we?
No.
I don't know.
I feel like we would know if somebody hated being remote at this point. But yeah, I mean, it is funny though, because you were in the earliest wave of like remote workers in front end development, let's just say it that. And then you know, we as CodePen started remote first. I'm here in Virginia. I always have been the whole time I've been at CodePen. I've only seen you in person, like what, 4 or 5 times, something like that? We see each other at work, but work is on our computers, you know? But we had the early days of, you know, we were getting on Skype calls and all this type of stuff. This was
pre-Skype? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we were pre-Zoom. You know, not terribly far ahead of Zoom, but a couple years in before we started actually using Zoom, we were on Skype in the early days.
Yeah.
And so we were at the very beginning where people were starting to say, you know, the thought leaders were beginning to talk about the idea of, you know, remote and remote first. You know, people were talking about building startups that were remote first. And we were one of them.
Right.
We've classically not blown our own horn about like personal or not personal, but business processes and stuff. But yeah, we were early pioneers in the field when you talk about remote first, you know.
It was. And mostly it meant you should write stuff down. Like that was the whole. Unfortunately, there wasn't that much to say. When you're remote first, it means like don't do watercolor or watercolor. Water cooler conversations. That was like the main thing. It's like, don't do a bunch of shit where everybody that wasn't there doesn't get the benefit of it.
Right.
That was like it. There wasn't that much else to say about it.
Yeah, the concept of async work and documenting everything you do. And that, it's funny because now people who have been either chose to, or let's be real, got forced into it during COVID working remote. We all know about the processes involved, which are, you know, telecommunication, and then also async working, something like Notion, or you use the Blackboard or whatever they call it in Slack. All those types of things are now second nature to basically everybody with what is sometimes called a laptop job, which is what we have. Mm. But, you know, we had the trend, and then we had, oh, this is the future of work. Remote is the future of work. And this was what everyone was saying.
I think that's true. I think Automattic tried to take that mantle, you know, because they're a much bigger company and very successfully works all remote. And so I think it was Matt Mullenweg trying to blow that horn of like, this is obviously working. And he had it's hard to, all of us are a product of our life experiences, but there is a weird trend. And I don't know if he was wrong necessarily in this, but I think this happens more than I'd like to see is people say, what worked for us, I'm going to now like write the book on.
Totally. Yes. People will get so prescriptive about things, but it's only because they can get a book deal. And everybody thinks, oh, the business book of the year. Let me read this. This is the insights I need for my company. And it's just 15 bullet points blown out to like 250, 300 pages.
Oh, aren't they all? Yeah, it's amazing. And it's not even just the book though. It's just whatever the medium is that they're talking about, they're trying to say like, make a very big point out of like only what worked for them. It's like if you ate only nothing but peanuts and then you lost some weight. So you said everybody should go on the no peanut diet or whatever. It happens all the freaking time in tech.
Totally. You know?
And it happens to work for us too. But I think we are A, small enough that nobody cares. And B, we didn't do the extrapolation. Be like, dude, this works for us. I don't know if it's going to work for you. Clearly some businesses work pretty well in an office too,
obviously so. And some things, I believe it's true, you got to work in person. This is not one of them. And that's just what kind of like what we've all landed at here. So now, you know, we went through the beginning of the trend. Then we went through the, oh, this is the future of work. And oh, every company is going to need to have a remote strategy because who knows when the next time you're not going to be allowed to go outside will be, you know? And now we are at, you know, the the turning of the wheel where they say remote is a productivity disaster. It must be destroyed. You know,
do you think that's is that settled in? Is that become the new thing?
Yeah. I think that we're in that cycle. I think we're in that headline cycle, but I don't honestly believe that it's true in all cases.
There's examples of it though, like Google and Apple pulling people back to the office with mandates and stuff. Like it's not just headlines. It's happening, right?
Oh yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of it is tied up in things that we've never been involved with. Like there's no real estate in the CodePen company, you know, like we've never had those concerns because we've been remote from the beginning. But yeah, if you got a gigantic office building standing empty and you're just paying triple net on it for no reason, you're going to want to bring people in, you know? So it's just been interesting to just kind of roll along through all these cycles. And it's just like, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're still doing it. It doesn't matter how the wind blows. We're still doing it.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It would have to be a pretty strong wind, or I don't think wind is going to cut it for us to change our ways. It literally wouldn't work. I mean, both Alex and I said, this is so important. The future of CodePen, we have to get an office and everybody has to come to the office. And I don't know, I guess we'll help with your relocation fees or something. I bet 100% of you would quit.
Regret.
But
I am well established where I am, and so is everybody else. We're all in places where we are and have been for a long time. You know, I've got family here, got kids in schools, etc. And none of us are going to do that. We would all be very sad to say goodbye, but I think we all would.
Yeah, probably. That was a weird dark turn. I didn't mean to make us talk about
that's okay. Quitting, you know, companies. Like to take a dark turn.
Yeah, fair enough. Cool. Yeah. So whatever. Remote work is like, it's just a thing that we do. I don't really care what anybody else has to say about it. And like, I don't know. It also just seems a little obvious, right? There's things called laptops. They have the internet on them. The only productivity that matters for us is taking care of our customers and writing code and building a new digital product that can be done from anywhere. Oh, dude, whatever.
We keep doing it.
It would be nice.
I
would say that it would be nice to get together a little more often than we do. Almost just for fun, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we all have a good time when we get together. It's just not that often.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's one of the things that we have as our privilege as an indie company. We're able to make this decision continuously. Every single day when we log in, we're all agreeing, remote's the way to go with this. And we don't have something above us telling us, okay, everybody's got to come back into the office.
Yeah. So what are the other trade-offs?
You know, one of the things that I think is kind of one of those nice to haves, and we were talking about it earlier, was things like the merch. You know, we used to have the merch. We used to have meetups where we would like send out like a bunch of coasters and t-shirts and pens and little, remember we even had lip balm for a little while. That's a real rare piece of gear.
I still have that box. You need some lip balm? It is, not in this house. It's not.
Not in your house. You're good.
No, Ruby
it's
prefers
funny because
it because the way it was.
Oh, nice. It is good stuff. Yeah.
It is. It came in like a sphere. You remember that? It was like not, it wasn't what you think of as like the brand chapstick or what's it, Burt's Bees, or what comes in like a stick. No, it was a sphere for some reason.
Yeah, it was really similar to, there was like an EOS brand that was out for a while that was very popular when we first added those. And I remember just selling the idea of doing it because it's like t-shirts, you know, there were always size differences and stuff like that. And I'm like, listen, everybody's got to be moisturized. So let's try lip balm. And so we started sending that out. So there was, you know, that was a lot of fun being able to just kind of like have parties in our honor practically all over the place. And people were doing really fun meetups, but it was a cost sink for us. It was a huge time sink for us. And if we were a bigger company, we'd still be doing them. We just are not. So, you know, that's a trade-off of being a small indie company, you know? Another thing, this one obviously ain't going to affect you, but for, you know, someone like me who has, like I said, made the decision to stay for 10 years, there's no like formal advancement structure. Like I am not able to say like, oh, you know, I had this title, I had this title, I had this title. I guess I could and you would agree to it, but there isn't that normal like advancement structure that a person would have through a long career like mine. At this point, I think you could fairly call mine a long career, but it's worth it to me. Like Yeah, if that bothered me, I'd have left by now, but I haven't.
Yeah, you're so, right, though. It is a little tricky, you know. You'd probably have to fake it on a resume and just be like, I was the, you know, I don't know, just make up some job titles. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you would agree to it. So would Alex. Yeah. And that would be fine. I could say I was the president. It wouldn't matter.
But, yeah. You know. Yeah, it wouldn't. I mean, I think about it too, though, because you're like, what if I just needed to like just go be a senior developer somewhere, though? Like, I don't even have that title. So how would I get that job? Would I, you know?
Yeah. And especially now when you think about how tight things are and how difficult it is for someone to find a job right now without a parsable... like a parsable structure that an AI can screen first, you're going to have to know a lot of people and talk your way into things. And that's the thing. I mean, like, that's a tricky thing to do. And so it's not even something you think about in the beginning of a career like this. But as time goes by, you know, you may be forced to think about it or forced to do it. And, you know, there is a trade-off in working in an ultra small company like ours. And that's one of
them. Yeah. Yeah. There's a good, there's a podcast called Front End Fire that Adam Argyle was on. We know Adam as a good CodePen community member, but he was at Google for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, really. Oh, yes. And with a good practical bent. And then he's not at Google anymore. So he was on a job hunt, you know, and that's what the podcast was on Front End Fire. It was his journey. And part of it was like, yeah, really good advice, you know, stuff that, you know, I'd go listen to it again if I was looking for a job. There's lots of good stuff in there. But a sad one was that, because I always thought like, oh my God, I know so many people in my long ass career in this of like, like on purpose cultivating my, you know, Rolodex, for lack of a better word, of people that I know. But he had one too. And he's like, that didn't work at all for me. Ooh, the like, yeah. Who you know, well, thing.
Times are tough right now. I mean, you see, if you look at the numbers of what's happening, it's ugly. And it's like, it's nobody's personal fault right now if they're struggling to find work. Things have tightened up beyond belief. So, you know, it's obviously tides turn, but it's a scary time for a lot of people, in particular in our industry, in the front end industry. So,
yeah, right. And while they're still churning them out at colleges, you know, like that trend hasn't reversed there yet. So there's just more
not
and more.
Not quite, but there's
the youths. Is there some change
demographic,
in it?
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah. There's a demographic cliff that is about to happen with college students. My son actually just went into college, and the year next year's enrollment, they expect to be down like some crazy percentage because there's simply not enough kids old enough to go to college because there's a gap in the United States here. In children being born. So like, yeah, who knows what they're going to be sending out the next wave of college kids with.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Like physical people. I was thinking like, do kids like enter college, at least some of them thinking about like, I am here because when I come out, I want a job in X or something.
Yeah.
Or at least they get that over time. And for a long time, it was like, well, tech, obviously, let's go.
Yep. Yeah, for a very long time. But people are starting to see, you know, the job market dry up. And there's a huge question mark right now of like, what are you even supposed to do? I mean, like I said, my son just went into college. I'm seeing it with him and his peers. They're all like kids who are like, you know, the Minecraft generation. They wanted to be computer scientists and do stuff on the computer. And now they're like, maybe time to think of something else because, of course, they're also facing.
Yeah, maybe. And lots of people saying like, well, let's do trades again. You know, those things are great. You know, and I think that's nice. Like if you have any part of your body wants to be a plumber, you should probably do that because you'll probably do okay. But still, like, I think I would be willing to make a little bit less money than a plumber if I could still do it in my Aeron chair, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, there's trade-offs in all careers. And yeah, like, I mean, for many people, different paths are better. And as the United States anyway, I can't speak for the rest of the world, we treated the trades like garbage. We treated everybody like, you know, fools if they didn't get into tech over the last 10 years. It was like, learn to code was the refrain that we sang to everyone when they had any kind of question about what to do with a career. And now here we are, 2025. Good luck finding a job in this trade, you know, in this trade.
Yeah. And whether it's true or not, it's starting to be like, why would you code with your hands? You can just ask a computer to code for you.
Yeah. Many people are asking those types of questions, but I do think, and I've said it probably before on the podcast, I'm sure. 2026 is going to be a great year to know how to write front-end code because you're going to be cleaning up a lot of messes. So if you like to tidy things up, still time to get in.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you like demonstrably like it. And then once you're in one place, it'll be easier to get your second one. You know, it's not like a total disaster. It's just,
yeah. It's obviously, hard. You know, you come out of school, when I was coming out of school, it was the .com boom. And, you know, I saw the boom and the bust, and you see a lot of booms and busts as you go, as you work for years and years, you see, lots of things change, and you also see lots of things remain the same. And it's a good idea to take note of what remains the same, because then you kind of, you have some grounding in how things are going to move.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're also from a, from like an era, CodePen, I mean, and like an era of, I don't know, it seemed like what a startup is you have an idea and then you make it with your hands and computers and stuff. And it's probably free.
Yes.
Just for some reason, I don't think we probably thought about it so much. I mean, it's a model that, I don't know, seemingly works okay for us, but it wouldn't have had to be. I bet we would have thought about it harder if it just wasn't so trendy at the time. But, you know, that's what it was then, and that's what it is now. CodePen's free, unless you want to upgrade to Pro. And that's kind of a trend gone by, too. You see less startups with maybe like a free trial, but...
Right, yeah. Well, I think a big part of that was the concept of like growth hacking in the startup era, where it was just like, just get as many people as you can get to sign up. It doesn't matter if they're monetized right away. And of course, that was always with the idea that you would secure more funding and more funding and more funding and then eventually exit, right? That was never our plan here. All of us, you know, early hires and the founders were looking at this as something that we wanted to do. Like, we wanted to do this, and we wanted this to be successful. And yeah, obviously, we're being compensated for it. This is our jobs. But I don't really feel like any of us have been seeking the exit the whole time, like so many startups did. I mean, lots and lots of companies that came up around the same time as us have sold, have had their grand exit and all that. But yeah, a big chunk of that was just getting as many people to sign up as possible. From my opinion is that that's going to start to fade away. I think we're already starting to see it, and I think it will fade away even further over time. It's just going to become harder and harder for small companies in particular to support an unpaid user at all, like at all. So I would love to be able to, for the long term, preserve the ability for people to sign up for CodePen for free. I think it's worthwhile to let people use this product and learn how to code and then see the value in Pro and go Pro. But also, we're aware that not everybody can go Pro, and it is still worthwhile for them to share their creativity, to create, to explore the front end. That's valuable to all of us as front end developers and as a community. We'll see what happens over time. I think that there will be pressures on that over time, and I would, you know, reluctantly give it up, but we might have to.
There will. I mean, things will change around here. I don't know. We don't have any immediate plans for it, but yeah, some more limits and things seem reasonable at a point, you know. You know, it's not... it's not in shitification, but people could think of it that way, you know, like, used to be free, now you're not. And you're like, well, you used to be cool.
Yeah, unfortunately. Right. You know, that's the paradox of the indie as well. You know, you were into CodePen before it went mainstream, before it blew up, you know, I'm Gen X, man. I'm like practically allergic to selling out. So I get it. Like, you want to have the indie thing that only cool people know about. And that doesn't exist anymore. You know, the everything is too spread out for little niche things to thrive in the same way that they used to. But, you know, there's still plenty of interesting things to do and plenty of moves to make, especially for a place that's good at surviving like we are.
Yeah, heck yeah, we are. This 2.0, it'll be a lot different in that way too, and that it's the same, you know. There's no changes to our account situation otherwise, except for that's going to cost more money at some point, so get ready for that. You might as well sign up now, go and get grandfathered in. Just saying.
Yeah, we We let you stay at your pro rate when you signed up, no matter what happens. There's people still paying $9 a month.
Yeah, there is. That's great.
And we thank them. Yep.
Yep. We do thank you, by the way. You don't get to keep it if you cancel, but you know, if you want to hang out with us,
well,
it's all
good. But there's plenty of people who have continuously stayed pro for that long, and we are very lucky to have them with us.
The play of 2.0 is like supporting more technologies, thus we're reaching more people, and crucially there's just way more stuff in there that we're thinking people will want to pay for. So our play isn't like change the nature of the business, it's like reach more people and give them more stuff that they want. So that's the change at first that we're going to try.
Answer the requests that we've had. We're adding the things that people have asked for. And we still are deeply plugged into the front end world. So we know what front end developers want. You know, we dog food. We use this thing. So that's the thing. All this time we've been at this, we all care about the thing. We weren't in it just for the money. We were always about doing CodePen. And I think that's part of the reason why we're all still here. Part of the reason why we still have a growing community, which is pretty incredible, because we care about this. We want to do CodePen. That's the main thing that CodePen does, is create CodePen.
Indeed. Well, well said. I'm not going to say anything beyond that. Thanks for joining me, Marie, and we'll both of you see you as we keep doing this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.